Welcome back to episode 11 of the Variable Podcast. This is your host, John Bragel, and this week we have the opportunity to hear from executive producer Ian Chi on the topic of reigniting the inner artist after burnout. I first met Ian after I received a message from him on Instagram. He had listened to the first episode of this podcast and told me how much it reminded him of his own story, reaching some level of industry success and feeling burned out and having to sort of rediscover himself. And he's been on that journey for a while now, and about, I want to say, 8 or so months ago, decided to take a sabbatical. So we are in this conversation reflecting a bit on his journey, what he's learned, and how to reignite that inner artist. So there's a lot of really fresh insights. I highly recommend checking out his TED Talk called Stop Trying to Change Yourself. When I listened to that, it exploded my mind because I hadn't really heard anything that articulates the filmmaker's journey to success and feeling this sense of loss of self and self-discovery that I just mentioned. So check that out. It's called Stop Trying to Change Yourself. In other exciting news about Ian, as of July 2023, he launched a new company called Nourish Creative, and they are a post-production and production studio, and I believe there's 4 members, and they all come from incredible backstories doing very purpose-driven, soulful work, and I can't wait to see the type of work that they produce, and I will certainly be recommending them for any of my production or post-production needs, just because I know, and after getting to know Ian and learning a bit about him, I definitely trust his sensibility and where he's coming from and his resume. If you go to his website at www.ianchi.com, you'll get a sense of his experience. I'll just run you through a few top line things. For one, he was the creative director of Jubilee, a media company dedicated to spreading empathy globally, which garnered 5 million plus subscribers and over 1 billion views within the 3 years that he worked there. He was also one of the creators of some of YouTube's most viral shows like Middle Ground, Spectrum, and Odd One Out. He was a chief creative of Mindset and Dive Studios, and his commercial work for Apple, Nike, NASA, New York Times, etc. has won awards all across the map. And most recently, he was the executive producer of a documentary called Accepted that was just nominated for an Emmy in 2023. So needless to say, he has an incredible portfolio, and I can't wait to see what him and his team at Nourish do. The last thing I'll say before diving into episode 11 with Ian is that we just activated a free trial to the Variable community. So if you see an event posted on our Instagram page, feel free to click the link in our bio to check out the community, join the event, join the conversation. We do these events weekly. It's a really awesome group of people that feel connected to these values of wellness and filmmaking and mental health and everything in between there. This is sort of like group therapy for filmmakers in a way. And for me, I've been really loving it. And I think others have too. Well, I know others have too. So come hang out. Otherwise, the episode will begin after a 2-second musicless transition. Cheers. This conversation came about, I would say, after a handful of conversations with Ian. It was kind of crazy meeting Ian and watching his TED Talk. If you haven't seen it yet, I definitely recommend checking it out. When I was watching it, I felt like I was watching a lot of my own story, and just so much as, you know, being an ambitious filmmaker, reaching some degree of like industry success by whatever metrics, and then just sort of burning out and feeling like we kind of had to start over again in some different type of way. But Ian's TED Talk articulates that in a way that I've never heard before. So as filmmakers, I definitely recommend checking that out. And then since watching that, watching a lot of Ian's work and realizing I know a lot of the same people that you're connected to. And so it's just been awesome knowing you since December. So thanks for coming on, Ian.
It's a pleasure. I felt the same way when I listened to the first Variable podcast. I thought it was like, it sounded like I was hearing my story just in a different form, but such familiar core and essence of the experience. So yeah, I we'll probably talk about some of that here, as well as where we are in that journey and post burnout. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today, I know the topic is reigniting the inner artist after burnout. I think the first half, maybe a little bit more, we'll dive into experiences leading up to burnout and like what kind of the burnout experience was like, and then how you've managed to walk your way out of that and reconnect with your creative self or inner artist, or I'm sure there's other ways to describe that. But how's that sound?
That sounds good. Yeah. Before we were recording, I was just mentioning, I feel like I'm still in the midst of that recovering the inner artist. So I would love to explore that together.
So to kick things off, Ian, can you bring us into your memory of the first time you realized that you loved filmmaking?
It's a very clear memory. Well, I guess I picked up like a camera just solo and just done things for fun when I was like a tiny kid, like 5, 6 years old. But the first instance I really got hooked was 7th grade. We had a middle school mock trial class where we would act like lawyers and we would, you know, defend our defendants. And for example, there were class laws, like you can't steal food or you can't steal someone else's equipment. So I was a lawyer in this case where our defendant had stolen somebody else's pizza. And there was a court trial where, you know, my defendant was on trial and what his punishment should be, or I don't remember exactly what the details were, if he'd pled innocent or guilty. But instead of explaining what happened to the jury, we decided to film it and make it a video and dramatize it. And so my two co-lawyers and I, we went out with a video camcorder and put on some wigs and acted like our defendant stealing some pizza and running around with a camera and filming all these angles. Whipped it into, I think it was called like Studio 9, some editing program that's, I have no idea if it even exists anymore, but we did that and then showed it in front of the class. And it was, everyone had such a joyful time. Like that was the first time I was like, oh, like this is really special. Like we've made something that gives people joy. They feel connected. And most importantly, I think it was just the most fun I had maybe ever had in creating something. And that continued on throughout, yeah, middle school. I moved to another country. I moved to Korea for high school and I thought I wouldn't be able to make films, but turned out there were some kids there who also wanted to make films. And so we continued to make some films in high school on our own and continued that, you know, through high school and college, and never got like formally trained. I actually got rejected from film school, which was devastating at the time. But I think that gave me even more firepower to just like do things on my own. And that just led me to keep on making things, you know, myself with friends and develop my skills and passion that way.
What would you say fueled your interest and passion like throughout your entire, let's call it your ascent in filmmaking?
You know, I feel like I'm just beginning to tap back into that fuel source a little bit now, but it's this feeling that like, I could do better. Like I could make something that's just like a little better, you know, like, can I do this or can I pull this off? The sense of possibility and the excitement of what could be made. Like I remember in high school for one of these art classes I was in, you know, I convinced my best friend to go to this island like 2 or 3 hours away, and it was a day trip and we had to get up at like some ridiculous time, like 4 or 5 a.m. and high schoolers don't want to get up at 4 or 5 a.m. That just isn't a thing. But I remember I was so gung-ho, like the alarm went off and I was like, this is gonna be so cool, like we're gonna make something dope. And like as soon as the alarm went off, I just like, you know, it was like the only thing I was thinking about in high school, just making dope stuff, you know. So I think it's just this idea of like just the possibility of making something dope, I think, is what drove me.
What on like maybe a deeper level fueled that sort of ambition?
That's a really good question. I've thought to myself that maybe it's like my dad's had a lot of influence. Like since I was young, he always told me that I would do great things and could use filmmaking for good. And like, he's a pastor, and so he always told me that when he'd preach sermons, it would reach like 100 people, maybe a couple hundred people. But he would tell me like, hey, and your films are going to reach millions of people and, you know, like things like this. And so maybe there was that. I don't know if I was driven as much by that sense of mission when I was younger, but maybe it played a part of like, I'm going to make things that really shake up the world, maybe. Thinking back, I do think I had a lot of like desire to, yeah, to do that, to make great, like really great, incredible work that would like, you know, change the world, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it. Yeah.
Do you think there are any other like factors or influences that propelled your drive to just keep going and growing?
I mean, I definitely had my mom's like perfectionism and drive, and my dad's like idealism and romanticism and artistry. So I think those two things, you know, I just wanted to keep making better and better things. And you know, we'll probably talk about how I got into burnout a little later, but I do remember like all the time, like really taking it upon myself to like telling myself I could always, you know, work harder, or that I could take more ownership and do more or take on more. It was, I had that growth mentality, which I think was really healthy at one point. And then later, I think became like, slowly it started to morph into this feeling that like, no matter how much growth I had, it didn't seem like I was arriving at this place where I was fully grown, you know, because I was always chasing this idea of, I'm going to fulfill my potential, but I never felt like I got there. So later, when I never felt like I got there, it would just turn into like, well, when am I going to get there? Like, well, maybe this big project, maybe that. And it just kept going, which is, I think, yeah, probably what contributed to burning out, I think. Yeah. Something that was healthy in the beginning that maybe morphed into this kind of like just constant need to grow, I guess, in a way, in a twisted way. Yeah.
What was it like for you when you had reached like different tiers of achievement? Like, for example, with Jubilee or with the different short films you made that were, in the eyes of the world, you know, successes. If you could walk us through a couple of those points where you had reached success or achieved something, what did that feel like at various points throughout your career as you were on the ascent?
When I take myself back, like if I had a time machine to like put myself back where I had some of those milestones, like it was incredibly exciting for sure. Like, you know, among many milestones, like one milestone was maybe like our first viral video at Jubilee, which like, I don't know, say, you know, like a million views, for example, right? Like your first video with a million views, it's like a high. It's like, whoa, like everything feels worth it. You know, there's this temporary sense of like, we did it. And it puts wind in your sails. And then just like any other thing that any humans get used to, it's like after, you know, doing that repeatedly, it becomes the new normal. So it doesn't give you that high anymore. So it's kind of like, I guess it's kind of like this, you know, the same way maybe drug addiction works, where it's like your tolerance or what have you, you need more of that hit, I guess, to have that same feeling. So yeah, it felt good, you know, when we hit the milestones. And then one, the goals got bigger. And then two, like all the old milestones that were achieved wouldn't give the same high. It's just kind of like this, you know, you hit it once and you get the high, and then after that, now what? Well, now you got to go get the 10 million views, you know, and that's going to be harder than the million views, you know?
You mentioned addiction, and I know in your TED talk, you mentioned you went to AA for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you learned anything through AA just about like addiction psychology and maybe some parallels with like achievement culture or workaholism, if that was like an inflection point for you.
Yeah, I just had a brief conversation with my mom yesterday where I realized like addiction and like, I don't know if it's workaholism or focus or obsession, I think could be two sides of the same coin, where I'm really similar to my dad, and both of us, whenever we get into something, we really get into it. And so the strength of that is this really intense focus to, you know, knock a project out of the park or something like that. But the weak side of that is, yeah, I struggled a lot with not addiction to one substance per se, but just the need to like escape my mind or like escape my feelings, whether it was through alcohol or junk food or what have you. Yeah, I guess chasing the high, I guess in a way, yeah, chasing the next high from the achievement or the need to keep that up, I guess could be seen as like an addiction. Yeah, I think for sure, like over time, somehow I became really attached to the idea of just looking good in front of other people and maintaining that. I didn't even realize it was happening to me, but that became more important than the joy of the work. And I don't know where that happened exactly. It was kind of, it's like a very blurry line, but you know, looking back on my journey where I've been up to now, I think that's what happened. It became like trying to, you know, get fulfillment from things outside of myself and achieving things or looking good versus, you know, doing something that I really enjoyed that brought me a lot of happiness. That was like an expression of who I was, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I relate a lot to this idea that it all kind of grew into this world of worrying and concerning with what other people think. I feel like looking back on it, that's sort of like the precipice of my own experiences, is like right before burnout. It's like I couldn't make anything creative, like purely creative and expressive, without kind of trying to figure out some type of formula to be liked and accepted. And so I just stopped making things for myself.
That's so similar to my journey as well. Yeah. And part of it, I'm sure you resonate, John, is like whenever you're thinking of doing a project, it's like it became so strategic of yep. whether or not it would do well or it would lead to more opportunities or something like that. And so over time, I think I'm just, you know, streaming this now as I speak to you, but I think over time, as like those milestones were reached, it's like it's the only way I need to go. Like I need to find a way to go more, you know, up and to the right. Right. And so that means my choices of what I can make, it has to be that much more precise and perfect to like go up into the right. So it's not like I can't make anything I want to make anymore. Like I have to do this thing to get over there, you know, and that window got like tighter and tighter, I think, is maybe what happened. Because I remember feeling like so much like hesitation or, you know, this perfectionist, like trying to find the exact right, you know, even the simplest edits or something, like is this tiny cut better, is that better, like, you know what I mean, like instead of just going with what I feel, it was kind of like what's the right answer, you know. It became like a test instead of like a canvas, you know.
It sounds like it's this obsessiveness that I also experienced at that point in the journey. It's like an obsession with trying to control the outcome of any given project.
Yeah. And part of that control was like, I knew that, you know, my anxiety and perfectionism like wasn't helping me, but I think I was also like trying to control that as well. Like I was trying to find a way to like, you know, not be the perfectionist and really judging myself about it too, versus like sitting down and kind of assessing, you know, what was there.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So outside of that being like a pretty obvious red flag in retrospect of, you know, burnout rearing its head, I would say, were there any other red flags that started to pop up for you, maybe even more subconsciously in your life or events that made you start to realize that you were burning out?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that started to happen that I don't think I was conscious of at the time, but like I just remember having more negative thoughts of like and just not wanting to do like any work, you know, or just like negative things about like only seeing why people, you know, know, wouldn't like this piece, or like, you know, how much work it would be to do this piece. And so these hurdles to any project just became bigger in my brain. It just felt like so much work. At the time, I told myself, you know, I'm trying to work hard and figure it out. But looking back, it was just like it takes so much energy to act like someone you're not. And because it was taking so much energy, like everything felt like so much work. It was like exhausting. So that probably was a clear sign. Yeah, just like constant, just like tired, you know, just tired all the time and not wanting to do anything.
What were some of the first like proactive steps that you started to take to kind of figure out what you were experiencing?
Man, it took a lot to really get to a point where, so right now I'm on a sabbatical year where I've committed to 1 year of my life where, you know, this is a time for me to rest, to recover, to reflect. And it took a lot for me to get to a point where I committed to that. So like, I don't even know if it was proactive, dude. Like, I just got to a point where I was so tired and exhausted and jaded and anxious that for a good amount of time, I couldn't really do much. I couldn't be proactive to go out and do much. But, you know, like last year, around this time, I was just at home a lot, like really not doing anything. I was like biking to the beach. I was just hanging out at home. I was like, to be honest, I don't even really remember too much of what I did. It was just a lot of just like being at home, like just chilling, like, you know, just laying down and sleeping a lot. So I did that for a couple months. And then I had this idea of doing a sabbatical, like maybe like 3 years ago. And that idea just came back, and I still was jaded and thought that even if I did this year, like maybe I would still be as tired on the other side. But I was just so tired, you know, that, you know, it didn't feel like there was anything to lose at that point and just commit to a year of not having to do anything. So I decided on, I'm going to do that starting January 25th of this year. And now it's about halfway through. Yeah, and it's probably one of the best decisions I've made in my life. I'm very grateful that I made that decision. Like there was some kind of gut feeling that like, I had no idea what was in the year, but I feel like there was something deep within me just saying that, just take the year and there's gonna be something. Like, I don't know what it is, but there's gotta be something, you know? So I just followed that feeling. But I'm still very much in, you know, the healing process. I feel way better, you know, than I did a year ago or even a couple months ago. And I feel like I'm, you know, I've started to create my own podcast and edit a few things here and there that's just completely my own. So I'm so grateful to just be getting little hints of that desire again to create from my own voice. Because just like you, actually, like I hadn't made anything that was mine in a really long time, like in years. So I'm very just grateful that I get to feel the feeling again of like, you know, to begin to feel that joy again of creating again. And going forward, I'm doing my best to protect that and not to put any pressure around it in any way, to really protect that freedom and creativity. Yeah.
I want to take just a couple steps back for people that don't know your story, to the circumstances of you deciding to leave the company you were at, Jubilee, and there was another company. But like, what did that process look like of you actually deciding, no, I can't do this anymore, I have to start taking care of myself?
I think there was a growing desire for sure that I want to be able to do things my own way, like purely from my own selfish point of view. Like, I felt like there were certain things I couldn't do the way I wanted in these companies, which is natural at any company. But coming to know myself recently, I realized that I think I'm the type of person who either has to create, you know, my own thing, or I find a way to be fully expressive individually. So because I felt that, you know, that's what I communicated in each of these places. It's like, hey, I just feel a desire to essentially do my own thing, like to create my own company. And I don't know if this is an itch I can be able to scratch anywhere else. That said, you know, I ended up joining that second company after I told Jubilee that, right? And that was an instance where I fell back into this, I think, this ambition mindset, because I saw this was a startup that was highly successful, you know, with big stars and lots of funding. And so, you know, it was very kind of, it felt opportunistic. And if I don't hop on this train, like, this is going to go into the stratosphere. And so that's why I joined that company as well. And it was a lot of work, you know, it was a lot of work. Love everyone at Jubilee and Mindset both, but it took both of those places and being kind of in the situation where I felt like I was just slogging through this swamp for a couple of years to finally get to a point where I, you know, just told myself that I just need to find a way where I can be completely me and do things the way I want. Yeah, that's relatively recent. Still working on a way of how to carve out the space, time, and, you know, all these things to create that kind of freedom for myself, which is another challenge in of itself, but a good challenge.
One thing that's coming to mind when you're talking is just the idea of the inner voice or the higher self or God, however people define it. But I'm curious now that you've made some steps in your own direction, how are you sort of seeking into that higher consciousness or finding direction that feels right for who you are and where you are in your life?
That's a fantastic question. And, you know, just in the past couple days, I've been thinking to myself, like, because I still struggle with this, like, feeling of, like, sometimes it feels like I'm just tired all the time still, right? Not as bad as it used to be like a year ago, but I still have these thoughts that come up of like, if I get up and I'm going to go on a run, it's like, I really don't want to go on a run right now, you know, like these kind of thoughts. But this might sound so abstract and vague, but I feel like there is, like, when I'm really just aware and present and I can kind of like watch those thoughts, there's something a little wider or deeper that is like, hey, if you do this thing, like, it will actually give you energy. Like, you may not feel it right now, but you just have to like head towards that place. And I promise on the other side, there'll be some energy. And to me, that voice is the inner voice or God or higher self or however you want to call it. Like, it's not something that it doesn't feel like a pushing. It feels like kind of a gravity. Like, it's kind of like, hey, like, you don't have to do this, but if you do, you'll probably feel better, you know, like that kind of feeling. So I've been trying to follow that voice more. And thank goodness, like, you know, so far, you know, I'm going to keep falling off the track once in a while here and there. But I feel like every time I'm following that really quiet whisper gravity field, if you will, I think it is giving me more energy. And it takes kind of a kind of courage to lean into that, because I still hear the voice of the ego very strong of like, oh, like, you know, that's going to be really tiring, or, oh, like, you know, no one's going to care or whatever. But in a way, now I'm looking at that voice as kind of a compass, where it's like, if you hear these voices, like, it's good to kind of like lean into it a bit. Where like Andrew Huberman on this podcast, he was talking about this, I think it was some kind of psychology experiment with a bunch of people, and David Goggins was there, like this really hardcore like Navy SEAL guy. And he was talking about how David Goggins has worked out a way of, whenever he feels fear, to leap into action. It's like most people take fear and it causes them to kind of, you know, get smaller or kind of back away. But he was saying that if you can just take that anxiety thought or the fear thought or the worry thought or whatever it is, and it's actually a trigger to like lean into it and to like go towards what you feel resistance towards, that is maybe a good way to just continually expand and become conscious of your fears. And it requires a lot of courage, I think, but it's kind of like surrendering to this call that is bigger than yourself. You know, like, you don't want to do it, but it's like, it's good for you, you know. It makes your ego squirm, which is not pleasant, but probably for the highest good at the end of the day.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. And when we open the conversation up, I'd be curious to hear others' thoughts about walking into the fear as opposed to running away from it. Because I know for myself in my own journey with film, I was running away from it for like, you know, yeah, I was like recovering for probably like a year or two, maybe, but I was running away from it for probably two solid years because I was terrified to go back to a place of burnout because that was such a part of my story and lived in my body, the feelings. And through working with my therapist exclusively on this topic for an extended period of time, came to realize that no, I actually love filmmaking. So I love that, everything what you just said. And again, let's circle back to that when we open the conversation up.
I would love to. Yeah.
I'm curious, in like, how did you experience that inner voice when you were on your kind of initial career ascent? What was your relationship to that like, or was there a relationship?
You're talking about like my high school, college days, right? On the like writing the passion days.
Even in your, when you were at Jubilee and the other companies that you were doing like really high end stuff.
I think I sometimes tend to judge my previous ambition because I'm at a new place now. But if I take myself back to at the time, like I think the desire was really authentic and real, like this desire to change the world. And I, because it was also aligned with that passion and the joy. And so I think the inner voice was pretty aligned with just following, you know, for lack of a better phrase, just following my passion. It's just somewhere along the line that it started to kind of splinter off, I suppose. And I kept holding on to this idea when it wasn't quite aligned with the inner voice anymore. And that's what led to the burnout. Yeah. And there was other things mixed in too, you know, a lot of pride and, you know, need to achieve and things like that. But it was still overall like aligned enough that I had the joy and passion for what I was doing. I don't know if that makes sense.
For sure. I feel like that's like the millennial Gen Z credo that I think a lot of us fall into, is like, follow your passion, follow your dreams, and you'll be happy. And yeah, that's probably what I was riding too, largely.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah, definitely. Maybe a part of it is age too. It's like, I don't know, when I started getting to like mid, late 20 or early, I'm 32 now, but you know, you start having thoughts about like, okay, following my passion, doing these things here, like I should be here at this time. And then, you know, the more of these kind of like structures you start to impose on yourself, the more you start to question like, well, am I far enough? You know, like I should be in my late 20s or early 30s, you know, and that's, you start to kind of question yourself, I guess. So I guess it's like, yeah, I don't know, that initial energy and passion and the world changing, it's like useful up to a point. And then it's like when you're supposed to mature, like you're supposed to mature without holding on too much to, you know, these ideas of where you should be and things like that.
I got a few questions for this kind of, let's call it a second part of the conversation where we talk about just like the creative self and reconnecting to the inner artist after burnout. So maybe just walk us through a little bit about what your journey's been like since you decided to kind of take a step back, and the journey specifically to getting in touch with your inner artist or creative self.
Since a long time ago, travel has always been something to me that has brought me a lot of stimulation and inspiration and joy. And so that was my intention, to travel as much as I could throughout my entire sabbatical. So I started it by going to Korea, my home country, where I went to high school, and spending time with my best friend and just living with him for a month. And then I went to Japan for 2 weeks, and then I went to Thailand for 2 weeks. And in total, that's about like 2 months of travel. So it was incredibly dense just experiencing these, besides Korea, like Japan and Thailand especially. It was just like so much dense experience in a condensed period of time that I don't think I had the time or space to be in my head about anything. It was just like, be in front of this giant 50-foot Buddha, like, you know, like witness this amazing, you know, Michelin star ramen. Like every day was just like new stimuli that was like, you know, I didn't have time to worry about anything. It was just like, let's just go and experience. So I think that was kind of like a jolt, you know, to my system. And it kind of like shocked me out of, you know, some old thought patterns. And then I came home after that, and that's where I've been since. And it's the complete opposite, where it's like very calm, peaceful, not much stimuli. And for some reason, I felt the calling just to be here for a while and not travel too much more, because now I feel like I'm kind of integrating a lot of my, all of the inspiration I received and the new thoughts, you know, in this calm place. So like, in a way, I feel like if I kept traveling, like maybe I'd be running away from, you know, some things that are coming up at this really quiet place, because it's so quiet. I'm noticing my thoughts more. I'm noticing these patterns so much more. And in terms of going back to the inner artist, I've been intentional to not force myself to make anything. And if I don't feel like making anything, you know, I've been trying to remind myself that, okay, cool. Like, you don't have to make anything. Like, the world's not going to end. And, you know, this creative career, you know, there's a way to do this where I'm not bending over backwards to try to make it work financially. Like, I can try to separate these things a little more, where it's like, let's approach this project as something that'll be financially sustainable. But in terms of my own creation, you know, I don't want to put pressure on, I have to do something. So, you know, for the first half of the year, I didn't really make much. You know, I just traveled and I just chilled and I did a little bit of work. But recently, you know, I started my podcast, which I feel like that was organic. It was just like a very natural, like, you know, I've never made audio stories before. Before this, it was film, right? So I was like, well, this is a cool interest. I just wanted to follow it, of like, whatever the interest, curiosity was. So I just, you know, when I was traveling, I did do some stream of consciousness journals into a thing. I didn't know what it would become, but I did that. And I, for some reason, I kept recording things. And it was interesting to watch myself just like recording stuff. I didn't know why, but I guess there was an interest there that came up, and I just let myself follow that. So I'm trying to, yeah, maintain that protection over this interest I have now in just recording myself and putting some sound effects into it, and, you know, and exporting it as an MP3 and sharing it with people, because I enjoy it. And I would like to, yeah, just protect the integrity of that. And I do feel it growing, which is great. It's like I have certain episodes I want to make now, or things I want to talk about. I noticed these things that I want to create, and I want to try to create it, you know, better than I did in the first episode. And I want to share it. And it's starting to get me excited, you know, of like what I could create. And I think it's full circle back to the early days of why I got into it in the first place, of like, oh, like, what if this, like, it could become this, or like, yeah, I could share this thing. And then the other thing too has just been, I have like a list of all these films or books and stuff that I want to read or in just put into my brain. So I've been letting myself just explore any topic. Like, I'll go to ChatGPT and I'll ask it to teach me about quantum physics and talk to me like I'm a 10-year-old, or I'll ask it about Gödel's incompleteness theorems. And it, you know, like, and the other day I just asked it, how many inhabitable planets are there in the universe, out of curiosity? And it told me that, you know, if you imagine the number of grains of sand on Earth and you multiply that by some millions of numbers, like, that's how many planets there are that could have life. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. That's, you know, amazing. So random things like that, I'm just letting myself just dive into it. And I think a real key word is curiosity. It's like just letting yourself like explore things you're curious about. I'm realizing the precious value of that, that if you're curious about something, like letting yourself explore it, I think that's giving me more life.
A lot of what's coming to my mind when you're talking is just the idea of creating for your enjoyment, creating for your own enjoyment, enjoying the process, instead of what I think we both experienced was putting so much pressure on the outcome of every creative thing that it was no longer enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah. You put it very succinctly, perfectly. That's it.
Yeah. It also sounds to me like the time that you've given yourself away has been able to allow you to separate your job or your work from your own unique identity.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I historically put a lot of pressure on my work and everything to, you know, serve my own, like, you know, I identified with that as my own value and stuff. But it's useful to be able to approach certain projects as, this is this and that's that, you know, so I don't have to put pressure on my own creativity anymore.
I would say that's probably the biggest thing that I've gained coming out of my own identity crash, whatever you want to call it, is not having to take every job personally, at least, you know, the outcome and what that says about me. It's more of like an enjoyment and wanting to be a good collaborator and work hard and like represent the people I'm working with. And then if it comes out great, that's amazing, you know? And actually I'm finding things actually come out better.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, people feel your vibe when you're not trying to control them or have to pressure this to be a certain way, right? Things flow a little more smoothly.
Do you have a sense of how you'll kind of hold on to these new perspectives that you're gleaning and prevent another burnout episode in the future?
I'm thinking a lot about that these days, especially going into the second half of my sabbatical. Really basic fundamental things. I think I want to keep going by this mentality of kind of like, you know, separating into buckets what role each project plays and not taking everything personally. I think a lot of it is people. Like good people to have consistent community and connection and kind of like daily reminders, I guess. One thing I recently realized is, you know, that balance or whatever we're trying to get to, it's not a place you'll arrive at. It's like a daily practice, even moment to moment, refreshing of the slate to remind yourself of what the most important priorities are. Yeah, and I haven't done this yet, but I do intend to like sit down and really consider like a lot of different, you know, if not all aspects of my life or nourish or relationships, health, food, all these things, like how I want to sit down and kind of be very intentional about how I design it. Cause I think beforehand, it was just a lot of kind of like, let's see where this goes, or like, you know, this feels good in the moment and let's see where it leads. But it's like, I think I want to practice more intention now of like, day to day, how do I keep this in mind of that balance, that core, you know, the inner voice that we're talking about? I'm thinking a lot about intention. It requires a lot of intention and listening and discerning.
The last thing I want to ask you is just on the topic of curiosity is one that came up a lot for you and also for me as being one of the most fundamental ingredients to just being creative and feeling creative again is just like fearlessness in asking questions, curiosity. How do you find yourself fostering that at this point in your life?
I think besides like looking for things that I'm interested in, like besides just movies and books and things like that, I think maybe an important part of it is like intentionally doing something new that you've never done before, whatever way that looks like. Because at this point, at the age of 32, I feel like I've worked on enough projects that I, you know, have some like go-to rules for certain, you know, I don't know, editing techniques or what have you, you know, not even just related to film, just in, I don't know, relationships or whatnot. But I think there's so much more to explore that we are, you know, if we just stick to what we know, we're kind of limiting the number of colors that we have to work with. So maybe part of it is intentionally trying something new you've never tried before, or you don't know what the result will be. I read Gandhi's autobiography a couple months ago, and the title of his autobiography was The Story of My Experiments with Truth. And in the beginning, he makes it very clear that like this is kind of my best documentation of these experiments that I've tried. In truth, some of them have done well, some of them haven't. But constantly I've tried to, you know, keep experimenting with this and delving into the unknown. So there's an inherent mystery and unknown in experiments, right? It's like you don't really know what the outcome will be, which can be scary, but exhilarating, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah, you hit on something that is really interesting about curiosity and allowing ourselves to be curious. I think there is a lot of value in our experiences, you know, having made certain type of work that maybe we're happy with, or maybe that proves some type of value to the world. Like there is definitely value in that. I think a lot of my confidence in my ability to be curious at this point in my life comes from the fact that I kind of understand basic fundamentals. And the worst case, my questions are just crazy, and whoever is working with me thinks this is not a good idea. Well, we can always go back to the fundamental, more simple idea and execute something that's like good enough. But I think for me, I trust myself. Like, I trust my talents and my gifts at this point in my career. And I think that allows me, it gives me a boldness in my curiosity at this point that I had curiosity a lot, like when I was coming up, but it was a different type of curiosity. It wasn't necessarily like a confident curiosity. It was just curiosity for curiosity's sake, maybe, but I don't know where I'm going with all of this, or if you relate to that, but
I don't know if mature curiosity is the right way to put it, but it's like, I get what you're saying, where it's like you have some tools at your disposal, and using those, you're going to wade into new territory and see what you find. You're not going in there with zero tools now.
Right.
And you know what each tool is for. You can use it this way, that way, but maybe you can use it in a way that you've never used it before, maybe.
Well, maybe that's a good thing to open up the conversation on the topic of curiosity and maybe how other people find themselves or don't find themselves being curious in their work. Is that a valid question?
I would be curious to hear what lights people up the most, or is there a practice or things that folks do that when you do that thing or you engage in this thing, it's like, oh, it always, you know, gives me more ideas or, you know, more curiosity. I'm curious if people have like practices or things that work for them in terms of like nurturing that inner artist.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it up there. That's actually when we broke the interview off into a group discussion in the community. So again, if you're interested in joining any of these events with guests, we always break them off into conversations at the end. Sometimes we invite Q&As into the conversations, and then other times when we don't have guest speakers, they are just open group conversations. But that question at the end, that's what the conversation breaks off into, and all of that is recorded as well in the community. So if you're interested in checking that out, you know where to go. Otherwise, thanks again for coming and listening to this conversation with Ian Chi. Again, you can check him out at ianchi.com. And that's a wrap on episode 11. Cheers.